Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and my co-host today in the studio is Ms. Denise.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Denise. And today, our guest in the studio today is Crystal. Hi, Crystal.
Well, hi. Hello.
Welcome to Recovery Radio. Crystal, why don't you share a little bit about yourself, you know, how you wound up in Moscow here, and or if you grew up here or whatever. Give us a little history, and then we'll delve into your recovery story a little bit.
Well, actually, I was born in Texas, in Waco, and then I moved around a lot throughout California as a child, wound up in Seattle as a teenager, then now I'm in Moscow. So I've moved around a lot.
Wow. I guess we can just sort of dive right into your recovery story. You know, what it was like before you got sober, what it's been like afterwards, and, you know, what made the change in between.
Okay. Well, I'd like to start out in my 20s. I feel like I had a pretty normal lifestyle until I reached 21, and then I started drinking a lot on the weekends, going out with friends. But I was able to maintain my jobs. I actually moved up. By the age of 29, I was making six figures as an advertising executive, doing wonderful. I was on the top of my game. And I took a transfer to California, living alone, working from home, and also out in the field. I didn't know anybody. My neighbors offered me drugs, and I had said no for about 3 months. And then one night, I was just bored, and they offered me meth, and I said, you know what? Okay, why not? So I tried it, and I had worked out all the time, and I couldn't lose 5 pounds. It was funny, but I lost 5 pounds that weekend, and it was the silliest thing, but I think I was hooked that weekend. It literally changed my life that weekend. I put it in pill form or, you know, or snorted, and so that lasted about 6 months until I was introduced to needles. And again, I said no to that forever. And then once I did that, that truly changed my life. At that point, I could no longer keep my job. I was bored. Nothing entertained me enough. And so I ended up quitting my job. And unfortunately, now I have rent of $2,000 a month. I had a shopping addiction and I had a drug addiction and I had no job.
Oh, that could be bad.
It really was. Again, I never thought I would end out there. And from there, I just started looking online for jobs and looking at, I was on Craigslist, and I found myself into prostitution within 1 year of moving there. And so now I have a drug addiction and I'm a prostitute. And my life just was upside down. It was awful. I remember how awful it was. So I ended up moving to Spokane, where my mother was. And I thought, okay, this will be my change. I'll quit. I'm not going to do any of these things. But it didn't work. I still continued. And I ended up going many years still using hard. And it ruined a lot of things in my life. I lost everything in my storage in California before I moved here. And then I got pregnant. Well, the wonderful thing that God blessed me with was the minute I found out I was pregnant, I quit. It was the one thing, the one reason I could just quit just like that. It was great. And I quit until about 3 months after he was born. And then I started back again. I did end up meeting someone online that we got married. He had no idea that I had a drug addiction. So when I moved to Moscow to be with him, he ended up finding out through friends. They told on me, and which was a good thing. And so I quit. I quit for a whole year. It was great. I went to counseling. I thought I was totally cured. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't do any kind of outpatient or anything like that. A year into it, after I was sober, I started back. And then I found out I was pregnant again. I quit. Again, it was that simple. Like, I thought maybe I should be pregnant a lot because it's the one reason I can just quit. And again, 3 months after she was born, I started back again. Eventually, I think about a year went by and it came about to my husband that I was using. So I did go to rehab and it was a wonderful experience. I was able to quit for another year. And then I relapsed for a day, and then I would go 6 months, I'd relapse for a day. It was just a never-ending cycle. I feel like I never actually was quitting. I was just kind of taking a break because I don't know that I really wanted to quit. As miserable as it was, it's just hard to just say one more time. That one more time thing is so true. Mm-hmm. The last time I relapsed, it had been about 6 or 8 months since I had used. And I literally woke up and I decided I was going to relapse for that day. I said, okay, just one day, not one time. I figured I would do more than one time. I would use multiple times, but I was going to just do one day. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't call anybody. And meanwhile, I wasn't doing any AA or NA. I wasn't doing anything to really hold that sobriety. Mm-hmm. So I did use. And I had done, in less than 4 hours, more than I was ever doing. So much that's the time, the one I remember the most. I was looking at myself in the mirror as I was thinking about doing the last shot. I was shaking so bad I couldn't even function. And I tied my tie around my neck. And I'm looking at myself in the mirror and I'm going, am I going to die if I do this last shot? I really didn't know. I prayed. I said, please let me live. I really do want to live. If I survive this, I'll never do it again. And I mean, I know you can't make deals with God, but I really wasn't sure if I was going to survive. And I went through with it anyway. And I remember opening my eyes and I was like, oh my God, I survived. I'm alive. And I just fell to my knees and I just said, thank you, Lord. Thank you for letting me live. It just blows my mind that I was willing to die. Mm-hmm. And still do it. And that's what just really, really, really affects me. And you don't think about your kids. You don't think about anybody else. You're just thinking about yourself. And you're just thinking about that last shot. And it did change my life. And so I did tell people. I told my counselor right away. Actually, it took me 2 days to get in, but I told her. I told friends, eventually my family. I went to outpatient twice just so I could keep staying in control of what I'm doing. And I started going to meetings, AA meetings, NA meetings, mm-hmm. sharing with whoever I could because I wanted them to know. Because I think I had so many secrets only, and I only lied, of course, about that, but I had so many lies and secrets, and the silence was, I think that's what kept me from staying sober too, is because I didn't hang around anybody that used. My husband didn't know. So who's going to talk to me about staying sober? Nobody.
Right.
So I surround myself with people that are trying to stay, that are staying sober and that want to help me to stay sober. And in that, I've been able to meet new friends. My kids, I'm not afraid to go to their games and meet moms. I look forward to it. I get numbers and I meet new people, and they're wonderful people. People that have jobs and want to better their lives and are just there spiritually. And so that's made a big difference in my life.
Surrounding yourself with your own tribe, people that understand you, that for me, that was, you know, the biggest deal about going to meetings and, you know, the AA fellowship, which is, you know, my program. It's so funny that normal healthy people that you meet on the street that haven't experienced addiction or, you know, severe codependent. I mean, you know, it's behavioral health too. You can have habits that are as unhealthy as drinking or drugging, no doubt. But those people, they can't support you. They can say, oh, isn't that great? You've been clean and sober for 6 months. Oh, isn't that great? All that does is inflate my ego and go, yeah, I could probably have a drink now. I could probably party for a day. I'll be okay.
Right.
But that's not what I need. You know, no. What I need is, hey, keep coming back. hey, maybe you should volunteer for a little more service work in your group. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you should go get a district service position. You know, all those sort of things that aren't necessarily things I want to hear, but things I need to hear. You know, yeah. I mean, it's one thing when your spouse comes down on you for, you know, a behavior that's unhealthy, then we react out of guilt and we'll make a strident effort. But until we get our brain reset through some sort of program, AA program, NA program, any program through restoration or any of those, because those are programs that are basically spiritual programs of action.
Yes.
And you got to have those people around you or
you don't
have a whole lot of hope.
Yeah, you got to be, I find working actively on making changes in the areas that I need to and being around people who are also making changes is really cool instead of just staying stuck. Whatever areas you're working on.
Right.
It's great.
Yeah, we all have areas.
We do.
Well,
so, I was just going to say, tell us more about what you found in recovery.
Well, since I've been sober, the doors have opened with friends, with family. I'm able to spend time with my kiddos. I enjoy them so much, and they're 8 and 11, and they're the highlight of my life. And now I can really be involved and do everything and be that mom and be there and take them places and do things with them. And after I had over a year, the gal that was working at the recovery center had called me and said, hey, we have a position that's opening. It's part-time as a recovery coach. I think you would be perfect for it. Mm-hmm. And it blew my mind. I thought, wow. So now I've been here 6 months, and I'm the recovery coach for the jails. I actually get to go into the jails and speak with women about their journey. And I feel like I have a lot to bring to the table of this is where I was and this is where I am. And it's been wonderful. It's been the best experience ever. In fact, I'm thankful every week when I leave that jail. Thank you, Lord, for giving me the wisdom to talk with them and the patience and the listening skills. And thank you for my family that I get to go home to every week.
Right, right. Because, you know, but for the grace of God.
That's right.
You're right next to him. Did you ever have a jail experience while you were out there?
No, wow. I was pretty lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was the same way. You know, I deserved to go to jail on a daily basis, but for some reason it never happened. A few close calls and all that. But being able to take that experience of yours into, you know, jail and share it with people, you know, maybe they'll get a hint that, you know, it's not just stopping. It's how do you stay stopped and why you stay stopped. Because anyone can stop, you know, for a given length of time. But until you learn how to fill that void, that hole in your soul that only a drug or a drink seems to fill, you're doomed. You're gonna repeat it, you know, given any span of time. And that's what the spiritual aspect of recovery is all about. You know, it's learning how to live sober.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you were talking about that, about how when we take away negative things in our lives, like, you know, using or drinking, we need to replace them with healthy things or else it's going to come back. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, you just have to replace it. If you're taking away a negative coping behavior or something like that, again, whether it's drugs and alcohol or codependency or just some other choices, there's a lot of different things that we can switch to after we stop drinking or using drugs and taking those away and replacing it with something healthy, especially in community with people who understand and can be supportive. I find that makes all the difference.
So my husband has never done a drug in his life. So he had no idea what to look for in me. I think that's why I was able to get away with it for so many years, because he truly didn't know. Once he found out, he knew what to look for, of course, at that point. But when, unfortunately, since he doesn't have that capacity of knowing, when he did find out, he pretty much said to me, it's either the family, you pick, it's your family or drugs. Like, it was just that simple. Like,
right.
Make a choice.
Sure, which basically it is, honestly.
I mean, okay, it is, but I feel like, so how I don't know, what I think is, they're both number one. They were both number one at that time. I didn't feel like they were in the same playing field. I loved my family, but I loved drugs, and there really wasn't a competition because I didn't see them on the same road. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel like it was just one or the other, because it wasn't that simple just to give up for family. I loved my family, but it wasn't that simple for me. Mm-hmm. Now that I've changed my whole life and I look at things differently, now it's easy for me to say, I want to be there for my kids.
Right.
I do want to be. But again, before, I don't think I was actually ever comparing them.
Right. Well, when I say, I'll expand on that, because I don't want to say that what you're saying is wrong or invalid. That's the word I was looking for. When the drug takes over, you know, it becomes the number one priority.
Yes.
You know, even over family and whatnot. So that's what I mean when
you're right. It does.
Yeah, it's like, yes, I still love my family, but I got to get my fix.
Yes.
I've got to do that. So in that sense, it becomes the most important thing in your life, even
true.
Beyond family, beyond personal health. Like you were describing, if I take this last shot, am I going to die? And the drug said, who cares? Go ahead, take it.
Take that chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's what the drug demands, or the alcohol or whatever. So that's what I meant.
No, that makes sense.
That you didn't love your family, or, you know, you discount them. You can love them to death, but once that demon...
It takes over.
Yeah. Yeah, you're stuck. So, yeah. That's the way it was for me, you know. Hey, go to the doctor. My skin's turning yellow. My eyes are looking weird. It's like, oh, well, you have alcoholic hepatitis. Oh, okay. Well, maybe you should cut back a little bit. I can do that. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to die. Your family's waiting for the phone call that you've died in a horrific accident and taken four other innocent people with you.
Yeah.
And it's not enough. It's not enough. You just got to have that divine intervention. That's what it was for me. I woke up in the middle of the night realizing I didn't have enough booze in the bottle to stave off the shakes until the liquor store opened the next day. And I just said, God, I can't do this anymore. That was it. That was my whole prayer. And the next morning I woke up, when I came to, I wasn't really sleeping in those days, just passing out, you know. The next morning when I woke up, I had this resolve that I didn't have to drink. I had not experienced that in years. I wake up in the morning and say, okay, I'm not going to drink today. I got things to do, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. 15 minutes later, glug, 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 glug.
I think all three of us have our moment where we were like, we really want to have something change. I mean, I feel like I didn't know what that was going to look like. And maybe, Johnny, did you know where you were going to go get help?
Fortunately, my mother, who had been an alcoholic almost all her life, got into Alcoholics Anonymous and was sober the last 10 years of her life.
So you had seen that.
So I had seen that, and although I didn't know anything about it, other than my mom was able to stay sober for 10 years.
That's awesome.
And that was, like, amazing to me. So I figured, well, I'll give that a chance.
That's
but
cool.
What was your experience?
So mine was winding up getting in trouble and being in jail in Latah for like a month. And prior to that, I mean, things had gotten pretty bad, you know, and I wanted to figure out something, but I had never really seen anybody. I was also older when I started, not older, but like I was in my late 20s before I started using, and I'd really never seen anybody go through recovery. So I didn't really know what that was about, but I did hear about a place here in town that summer before I went into jail. And so I started asking about that when my lawyer came in. And I was ready, and just being there and having the ability to not be using during that time was really helpful. That helped bring some clarity. I got the NA book out, started to realize that I was actually an addict. I actually didn't know that I was an addict. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I hadn't come to that, you know. I was like really in denial, I guess. So yeah.
Why don't we go ahead and take a short break here, listen to some music. And we'll be back with Crystal and Denise and sharing our stories of recovery and what it was like. And we'll get into what it's like now. So listen to some music and we'll be right back. You're listening to KRFP 90.3 Moscow Pullman.
Mm-hmm. start again to try and find a little bliss. So when you're a woman and the child, you release your bitterness. You drift apart some more each day.
Hey, welcome back. I am Radio Johnny, and I'm here in the studio slash conference room with Denise and Crystal, our guests today. And we were just talking in the break a little bit about people around us not understanding the nature of addiction and how it takes control of our lives. And people ask us, Crystal was sharing earlier, you know, people will say, hey, it's either me or the drug, it's either the family or the drug, without really having the understanding that I can't just walk away from the drug. The drug has basically hijacked my mind, and I will do whatever I can to keep with the family and keep the family going, but don't even think about taking my drug away. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I'll keep up without that. I mean, there back in the days, I remember the previous generation to me, amphetamine pills, you know, mother's little helper, you know, just
I remember those.
Catch up and, you know, get going. And where are you going at midnight, Mom? Well, the store's open late. And, you know.
And there's the crowds are all gone, and yeah, right. I can just go get through. No, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's... That's exactly what it was like. So, you know, in your relationship with your husband, how has that worked with your recovery? My wife has been very supportive of my recovery over the years. I mean, it's been a few decades, so I think we get to a point where we take it for granted. But, you know, being fairly fresh, how does that dynamic work in your household with your husband and your children even?
Well, in the beginning, when I first quit, he actually would drug test me every week for a while. This went on. And then eventually he stopped. And so now unfortunately, we don't really talk about my sobriety. I mention it when I have anniversaries. He knows when I go to meetings, where I'm going, but I guess with him, it's just hard because he doesn't understand it. So he doesn't really have any input to give me. So therefore I think that it makes him uncomfortable about talking about it with me, which is why I make double the effort to surround myself with people that I can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
That way I am sharing and talking. And
yeah, I don't think that's all that unusual. My relationship with my wife, I think she went to one meeting with me when I was a speaker. I have suggested maybe, you know, you would get something out of like Al-Anon, which is really good for people who are related to or married to, you know, people with alcoholism. And her thought on the matter is, well, I don't have a problem. You know, she doesn't feel she needs it, and I don't press it. And all I can do is make a living amends to her, suit up and show up. And when she makes requests, not piss and moan about, you know, every damn thing. Or if I have a reason to go do something, you know, I also don't feel like I have to justify it or check in with her every 5 minutes. You know, which, you know, like the drug testing your husband did. I totally get that. I mean, she used to go out and dig around in my car, look for that bottle that I had hidden somewhere. Mm-hmm. It took a long time to restore, you know, a minimal level of trust. And even today, when it comes to the big things, you know, I have to be very careful. It's like, do I want to buy a new car because my 97 Subaru is on its last leg and looks like a rolling Citation? Do I want to get it because of that or because, ooh, I want a shiny new car? You know, because I can still make bad decisions, you know, or decisions mm-hmm. based on bad thought, bad background. So I totally get it. Have you ever offered to have them come to a meeting with you? I mean, I'm getting personal here.
Oh, but, no, please. You know. No. Actually, I don't know why I've never offered that. I guess I feel like it's my thing. Mm-hmm. It's my thing, and I enjoy it, and I'm the one that gets the most out of it. So I kind of enjoy that. I think I want to keep it like that.
Yeah. Living sober, obviously things have changed for you. You know, you were offered a job when you probably felt you were unemployable.
Mm-hmm.
And what other aspects of your life have changed dramatically? I mean, unexpected stuff.
You know, my health has gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wasn't taking care of myself for many years, and now I feel like I'm on top of my game health-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. Even something simple, like I was joking with my friend, I would tell them when I would go to leave my house before, I would be sweating, dripping in sweat before I'd even get to my car. And now I can get ready, I can go anywhere, I can be on time, I can show up to appointments, and I'm not sweating. Like, my makeup looks the same. Like, I'm not huffing and puffing just to leave my house, for God's sake,
right.
before even going anywhere. And I was never reliable. I wasn't able, you couldn't count on me. I mean, even appointments that I wanted to go to that were fun for me, I still would miss. And I would get cut off from places, like certain, like physical therapy once. They cut me off. You could only miss 3 appointments. Once you miss it, they say no more.
Yeah.
I mean, and those were ones I needed, and I still didn't make it to them. So, I mean, I'm creating more relationships there as well, with businesses, with friends, making it to appointments, being there for my kids. My kids are all in sports, and that's a lot. It takes a lot out of you. To be honest, I was going to say I don't know how I did it before, but I didn't. I didn't do it before.
Right.
Now I can. I'm part of their life, and I think that's the biggest accomplishment, is being able to multitask and be able to be there for everybody, including myself, and take mm-hmm. time for me and do appointments for me and love me.
Right, right. That's
really important. I don't know how much I loved me before.
Right. In AA, when I sponsor men in AA, we do a inventory, moral inventory of ourselves and our 4-step. And to a person, you know, I'll lay it out how it shows in the book. We do the 3 columns, and, you know, you write down who you have a resentment against, what the resentment is, and how what it affects, you know, whether it's your finances, your ego, whatever, down in there. And they'll go through this whole list of all these people and institutions that they have resentments against. To a single person, they never put their name on the list. And that's got to be the first one on the list.
Yeah.
You know, I'm resentful at myself because I can't stop drinking or I can't stop using. That's got to be in the top of the list. Because if you can't look at yourself and see that aspect of you, how are you supposed to be able to figure out how to deal with those 40 other people on the list or my thousands, you know. Yeah, it's bad.
And I was thinking about, like, it sounds like you're, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is just my wording, that you're seeing that you have value and that you're loved and that you're important and that you're worth investing in yourself and, yeah, enjoying life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the above.
That's important. Yeah.
Yeah, both sides of that are important. It's like looking at the things that we did and how we hurt people, very important to, like, sort through all of that for sure. You know,
and then
I like that you mentioned that.
Making amends, too.
Yeah, making amends.
I can imagine when you...
Feels good to do that.
You might have had issues with your mom when you moved back in with her in Spokane and then continued on your behavior. But you were mentioning that you were helping her move this weekend. So
I have
obviously
a great relationship with her
now. That has changed radically.
Yes. Yes, I'm closer with my sisters and... I have two sisters and we're super close. Mm-hmm. we're all sober and that's wonderful.
Oh, really? So yeah. It's been a family affair.
It has. It has.
Not related to you, just everyone, you know, it's like my family. Both our parents were active alcoholics most of their lives. And in talking to some cousins of ours, and I'm the youngest, so most of these cousins are, 10, 20 years older than me. They knew the previous generation really well before that. They were all a bunch of drunks as well. There's even a distillery in Scotland that has my surname on it. I'm like, Yeah.
You're like,
yeah. I think God invented whiskey so that the Irish and the Scots couldn't take over the world. No great invention since the beginning there.
Stifling you so that you couldn't take over the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So what else you got? Denise, you have any thoughts or questions for Miss Crystal? I'm sure you do.
Well, I was just wondering, like, in your week, month, what kinds of things do you feel support you in your recovery?
Like who? Or
yeah, like anything. Like anything. Like even if it's self-care stuff or like things that you attend or affirmations you tell yourself, prayers, whatever kind of areas. And I know that's a big question to just throw on you, so I'm going to talk for just a minute to let you think about that. But I don't know. I just think that for me has been super helpful to... Because you have talked about how now you show up to things and you're on time and you're participating in what your kids are doing. And so that to me is like you're engaging in life. And so, I mean, even just the things that you mentioned support your recovery.
They
that's
do.
That's awesome. I just wanted to see if you wanted to add anything.
They do. No, I've started going to Restoration Night and I'm pretty excited. I actually went to church on Sunday and I got to find out all the different classes like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I'm super excited to join a life group. I've never done a life group, so this will be my first one in a couple days. I'm very excited about that. And my boy is now of age to do the youth group, so I'm signing him up to do youth. I really want to be a good leader for them, and this is the one area that I need to work on, and I know that I want to work on, is my relationship with Jesus Christ. And so I'm hopeful, and I'm excited about it. My sister is very... very spiritually inclined, and so she's been working with me as well. We talk all the time, but I would say that would be the main things. Just kind of working on my journey there.
Cool. Yeah. And in AA, we say we get a daily reprieve based on maintenance of our spiritual condition. So that is a really important thing for me.
And someone else had mentioned to me that, and I thought this was so true, I would like to spend as many hours seeking God and doing things that I want that will help me better my life with Jesus that I spent using. Yeah. Because I could probably read the entire Bible in a week if I spent that many hours. Mm-hmm. And it blows my mind how many hours I used to spend doing that, where now I can spend that many hours bettering my life. Yeah.
It was a full-time job being an
addict.
It was
a full-time job. Yeah. It was a hard job.
And losing everything at the same time.
Right? And right?
Seriously, lose your house, lose all your belongings. I mean.
Your health. Yeah.
Working your butt off to go backwards. Yeah,
yep.
I get that.
Great fun. I suggest that if anyone's listening and that's what's going on, man, come see us here at the Laetal Recovery Center. Mm-hmm. We can show you the way in the other direction.
Right. It's like the... the addict.
I've been there.
Addict alcoholic crossing the street, and he falls down into this pit in the street. And the lawyer walks by and he says, "Hey, man, I've fallen in this pit. Can you help me out?" And he takes his business card out and he says, "You know, call me and we'll see what we can work out." And then his doctor walks by and says, "Doc, I'm stuck in this pit. Can you help me out?" And the doctor writes him out a prescription and throws it down in there. And that should take care of you. Finally, this alcoholic addict comes walking by and the guy says, "Hey, man, I'm stuck in this pit. Can you help me out?" Well, the alcoholic addict jumps in the pit and the guy's like, "Why did you do that?" And he says, "I've been here. I know the way out. Come on, follow me."
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I love that.
Yeah.
I have not heard that. That was wonderful.
So that's how being of service person to person makes all the difference in the world. So anyway, on a high note, we'll wind this up right now. And thank you, Crystal, for volunteering to come in. And I know we kind of we came in under false pretense that we were going to talk about doing a radio show.
And then we put a mic in our face.
But occasionally we do just throw a bag over your head and drag you into the conference room and force you to share your experience, strength, and hope. But we really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This was a really fun experience.
And Ms. Denise, thank you again for stepping
up.
I hope we're going to hear you more and more. I know the fans love it because they can't stand listening to me constantly.
Oh, stop. So.
Anyway, and so that's it for the day. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you have suggestions or you want to, you know somebody who wants to share their story, or maybe you want to share your story, you can email me at lrcradiojohnny@gmail.com, lrcradiojohnny@gmail.com, or you can just call the Recovery Center, 883-1045, and they'll get a message over to me. Or drop in, whatever you like. Yep. Have a wonderful week out there, everybody. And remember, if you think you have a problem with drugs and alcohol or behavioral health, you do.